This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did-we-just-hit-a-million-orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The Nation magazine, this is a Bob Dylan special edition of Start Making Sense, our weekly podcast. I'm John Wiener.
We heard the news that Bob Dylan had won the Nobel Prize for Literature just after the news that all those women had come forward to testify they'd been sexually assaulted or groped by Donald Trump. It had been one of the most miserable and infuriating weeks in recent American political history. And then from Stockholm, out of the blue, we got this good news, something surprising and wonderful. My next-door neighbor said that for the first time in weeks, he felt pretty good about the world all day long. I told him, me too. For comment on that Nobel Prize, we turn to Greil Marcus. He's been writing about Bob Dylan for more than 40 years, in places including Rolling Stone, The New York Times, Art Forum, Interview, Salon, City Pages, Threepenny Review, and The Village Voice. And all those pieces have been collected and published in the book Bob Dylan by Greil Marcus, Writings 1968 to 2010. It's 481 pages long. And he has a new piece about Bob Dylan getting the Nobel Prize at the New York Times Online last week. We reached him this afternoon in Minneapolis, at one time the home of Bob Dylan. Greil Marcus, welcome.
Nice to be with you, John.
So Bob Dylan won the Nobel Prize for Literature. Do we have to argue about whether what Dylan writes is literature? Do we have to say Homer sang his epics or that Virgil was a lyricist?
Well, you know, I have no interest in those questions, and I've always thought the question of whether or not Bob Dylan was a poet was a waste of time and, you know, an utter bore to try and parse out. And I always thought that the campaign to win Bob Dylan the Nobel Prize, and God knows campaigning for Nobel Prizes is anything but unknown, people have been trying for years to promote Bob Dylan as someone who must win the Nobel Prize. And it always struck me as, you know, people wanting validation for their own admiration and obsession with Dylan. They wanted the Nobel Committee to certify them and their seriousness. I don't think it really had much to do with Bob Dylan at all, that campaign. And I always thought that was pretty ridiculous, you know, like he doesn't need it. On the other hand, when I heard about it early Thursday morning, I felt really good.
Yes,
I was very happy about it.
Yeah.
And I was happy for him, happy for Bob Dylan, and curious about what he might end up saying. He gave this extraordinary talk at the Music Cares Award ceremonies a year or so ago, 35, 40-minute talk, all written out ahead of time, nothing random about it, a lot of score settling, and a lot of, you know, pretty serious analysis of how and why he wrote his songs. Remarkable. I just hope he doesn't get up there and quote Faulkner, you know, we will endure.
You know, I'm with you on this. We don't need to have a Bob Dylan be a poet, but yet his words do have, a real a mysterious power that is sort of like literature, I guess.
Well, I mean, who knows what literature is? And really, who cares?
Yeah.
I don't care. You know, Bob Dylan is working in an area in the very broadest sense that Serge Gainsbourg worked in, and that's the area of the troubadours of southern France of and the Cathars of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years ago, where people took up subjects that were forbidden, they were not supposed to talk about, and they were able to hide these in songs, attacks on power, the affirmation of romantic love between different classes of people. This is the realm in which Bob Dylan has always worked. I think the first thing I ever wrote about Bob Dylan was a college paper about Bob Dylan and Walt Whitman.
Yeah.
And I think all you really need to know about that is not to say, as people said in the 1960s, if Walt Whitman were alive today, he'd be playing an electric guitar. No, I think you could say that as Bob Dylan has certainly recognized Walt Whitman as a comrade, a camarado, in Whitman's word, Whitman would recognize Dylan. You don't need to say more than that.
Well, I want to listen to some of these songs and talk about what he's done with them over the years. In the song Highway 61 Revisited from 1965, Bob sings those unforgettable lines. Abe says, where you want this killing done? God says, out on Highway 61. A friend told me last Thursday morning, he deserves the Nobel Prize just for those lines. Let's listen.
God said to Abraham, kill me a son. Abe said, man, you must be putting me on. God said, no. Abe said, what? God said, you can do what you want, Abe, but next time you see me coming, you better run. Well, Abe said, where you want this killing done? God said, all down Highway 61.
So, Greil, you've heard him sing this song many times. What was the most recent one?
I listened to his version of that song and when he played it at Desert Trip a week or so ago. You know, the big gathering in California of the Rolling Stones and the Who and Bob Dylan and Paul McCartney and let's see who else. Elvis was definitely there. Little Richard, Frank Sinatra made an appearance. Al Jolson. Al Jolson really stole the show. There's no question about that.
So what was that? What was it like hearing Bob sing Highway 61 Revisited a couple of weeks ago out in Coachella?
Well, you know, I always miss the police whistle, the police siren, which Bob Dylan plays. And if you listen to that song, You realize that the most rhythmic thing on the recording is the police siren. It's just, it swings. It's just uncanny. It's not just, you know, screech, screech, screech. It's got a lift to it. It's got almost a melody to it. And what's so brilliant about that song is probably the best written song Bob Dylan ever wrote. And it seemed like that in 1965, and it seems like that today is just the way the language begins to break down in that first voice. Abe say what? Just so fast. It's all moving so fast. You know, the first time I ever drove onto Highway 61, which was here in the Twin Cities, I really expected to have some kind of mystical vision. The highway had taken on such a charged sense from that song that it just didn't seem like a real place. It didn't seem like it could ever be ordinary in any way.
Well, I guess this is your Minnesota moment, news from my hometown of St. Paul. Of course, I grew up there. Highway 61, to me, I knew what it was. It was the way you got from Duluth to Minneapolis. Bob Dylan was born in Duluth and went to college for a year or two in Minneapolis. And then if you follow Highway 61, all the way, it goes all the way to New Orleans.
Yeah, but, you know, as James Marsh illustrated in his film, an hour-long film he made for the BBC in 1993 called Highway 61 Revisited. He came to the United States to make four films that were biographies of songs. Heartbreak Hotel, Peggy Sue, and Walk on the Wild Side, and Highway 61 Revisited. And he shows you that, among other things that happened on Highway 61, Elvis Presley lived on Highway 61.
Wow.
Martin Luther King was assassinated on Highway 61. Bessie Smith had her fatal auto accident on Highway 61, just to name a few things.
Wow. So I also want to listen to Masters of War. Dylan has been performing, I would say, intermittently over several decades. We first heard it in 1963. Let's listen to the opening verse and then we'll talk about it.
Come, you masters of war, here that build the big guns, here that build the death planes, here that build all the bombs, here that hide behind walls. It hide behind discs. I just don't want you to know I can see through your masks. You that never done nothing.
So in 1963, this was really stunning. Today, it's I guess we call it early Dylan, much more literal than what he was doing just 2 years later. You must have heard Bob Dylan sing Masters of War live dozens of times.
Well, here's the thing about that song. He started playing it, he wrote it, started playing it in 1963. He closed his set at Desert Trip with that song. So that's one hell of an arc.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can say, well, you know, this, the world still has lots of wars. The song is still current. The song is very specific. It's about what Franklin Roosevelt used to call war profiteers, mm-hmm. people who make money off wars, people who are invested in wars. It's not an anti-war song as such, but it comes across that way, and it comes across with a tremendous sense of weight, permanence, regret, despair, and defiance. Part of that is because its melody comes from an very ancient British folk song called Nottingham Town. Nobody knows how far back it goes, how old that melody is. That melody is part of what has kept that song alive because it just carries so much weight. Its roots are so deep. You can feel all that. That comes across. It doesn't have to be discussed or anything. It's just the body of the song. On the other hand, in 1991, when the first Gulf War was just about to start, and Dylan appears to accept a Lifetime Achievement Award at the Grammy ceremonies, and he comes on with his band, which at the time might have been the hottest band he's ever played with, and he launches into a song very fast, very, very noisy, with just, you know, streaks of electricity all over it. It's just hammering. And it's also completely incomprehensible. You know, he is purposely slurring one word into the other word. You can't make out the words. And it wasn't until, I think, somewhere around the third voice that the melody crept back into the performance. And I said, oh, my God, this is Masters of War. And, you know, then I could sort of begin to pick out a word here or there. But it was an astonishing performance, one of the greatest of his career. To play Masters of War with more ferocity than he had ever played it, just as a war was beginning, and yet at the same time disguise it so that the performance would go off like a bomb, you know, maybe minutes, maybe months, maybe years after after it was first lit. So this is a song that is alive for Bob Dylan. I've heard him do it in so many different ways. And I wrote a long piece once called Stories of a Bad Song about Masters of War. Because in some ways it's just incredibly heavy-handed and self-righteous and self-affirming in a kind of cheap way. And yet, given what he and other people have done with this song, it may be the song that outlasts him the longest. Who knows?
Well, we can't conclude our discussion of Bob Dylan's Nobel Prize without listening to Like a Rolling Stone.
Once upon a time, you dressed so fine, threw the bumps of dime in your prime. Then you call, say beware doll, you're bound to fall, you thought they were all kidding you. You used to laugh about everybody that was hanging out. Now you don't talk so loud. Now you don't seem so proud about having to be scrounging your next meal. How does it feel? How does it feel to be without a home? Like a complete unknown.
Such a magnificent song, Greil Marcus. Let's talk about Like a Rolling Stone.
Well, you know, I can't listen to that song without feeling as if I'm hearing it for the first time. Every note in that song, every word, every inflection is a breakthrough. There is an energy that has come to bear. All the people in that room, all the people playing that song at that moment, the song is taking them past themselves, taking them somewhere where they have never been. They've never played, they've never sung with that kind of synchronicity. Every person playing off every other, and every person stepping into a realm where he's never been before in terms of passion, expressiveness, formal intensity, taking a form and pushing it to its absolute limit and pushing yourself past those limits. That's what you hear over 6 minutes. And, you know, every time I hear it on the radio in a context of discussion, I just think they're not going to play the whole thing, which of course you didn't, and you know I can understand that. But you know, hearing it today, hearing just that first verse and the first chorus, you realize that that is a great song all by itself. They could have stopped right there, and it would have been something singular. It wouldn't have been what it became. You know, let's put it this way. A song like that, a work of art like that, comes to no one, no artist, more than once. But it doesn't necessarily come in anyone's lifetime. We're lucky we're alive when that song can be played.
We're lucky to be alive when Bob Dylan sang Like a Rolling Stone. Greil Marcus. He wrote about Bob Dylan getting the Nobel Prize for the New York Times. He also wrote the book Bob Dylan by Greil Marcus, Writings 1968 to 2010. Greil, thanks for talking with us today.
Thanks, John. It's always a pleasure, and nothing could be more fun than to talk about this.
This special Bob Dylan edition of Start Making Sense from The Nation magazine was co-produced by the LA Review of Books and recorded at the studios of Emerson College Los Angeles by Ernesto Orellano, with additional technical assistance from Justin Allen. Alan Minsky is our senior producer, Frank Reynolds is our executive producer, Annie Shields is our engagement editor, Katrina Vandenhoevel is editor and publisher of The Nation. And of course, special thanks to Elston Gunn and all those who sailed with him.
Our theme music is from Barcelona Afrobeat, licensed by Creative Commons. Find out more about Start Making Sense at thenation.com and subscribe to Start Making Sense wherever you get your podcasts, at SoundCloud, Stitcher, or iTunes. I'm John Wiener. Thanks for listening.
What if I told you that you can support your blood pressure and healthy CoQ10 levels with two chews a day? The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. That's like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 supports your cardiovascular health. Visit RadioBeats.com and find out how you can get a free 30-day supply on bundles and save 15% with the promo code DEAL.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.